This episode is brought to you by CBS All Access. If you don't already subscribe to CBS All Access, please use our affiliate link by going to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS. Using our affiliate link gives us a little credit, which helps us to keep bringing you great content. U.S. residents only.
Hello, and welcome to episode 9 of the Star Trek Picard cast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we will be covering season 1, episode 5, titled Stardust City Rag. Before we get started, I have moved something forward in something we always mention near the end of the podcast, but this time I'm going to do it at the start, because it's been a while since we got any Apple Podcast reviews. We've got a few for the Star Trek Picard cast, but for the Star Trek Discovery podcast, which many of you may be listening to us on, it's been a while. So we could really use 5-star rating and or review. So help us out. Just wanted to mention that. Now we'll get started with the festivities. That's open hailing frequencies. All right, so first off, we've got some, there's quite a bit of feedback actually for last week, both the episode and the podcast. So just want to remind you, we have chapters. So you can, if your podcast client allows you to use chapters and you want to skip ahead, here's your chance. So anyway, first is for Absolute Candor from Aaron from Akron. He says, I give it 9 out of 10 side trips. Now we see the enormousness of Picard and the Federation not doing anything to help the Romulans. The human toll of not helping refugees. Elnor probably feels like his quote-unquote father abandoned him and just decided to show up. I thought that the emergency holograms were going to be gimmicky, but they're pretty awesome. I wonder how many more there are. If there's one thing that doesn't work, it's Soji and Narek. I really don't like them on their story. Can they just go away? And for this week anyway, spoiler, although assuming you're listening to this, you probably watched the episode. The answer is yes. And thank yes. goodness, because I did not miss them at all. I needed a break.
Me too. I'm pretty sure I wrote that.
Oh, you did. Okay. So we both agree.
Yeah. Oh, I did not miss them one bit. The episode ended and I was like, oh, I didn't miss them at all. Too bad. Yeah, I don't know. I just, the whole, honestly, the entire storyline on the artifact is not doing it for me. I don't know what's going on there, what they're doing or why or what, but
yep.
I'm not a fan.
Not a fan. Not a fan.
Snooze fest for me. Anyway.
Yes. I would agree. I mean, it started off with that tooth, but it went on
for my gosh, the tooth.
Yes. But it's continued beyond that. I it doesn't enthrall me either. So
the tooth. That's another Dune reference. Okay. If you haven't seen Dune, you should watch it.
I the have version, seen it.
The version that has Sir Patrick Stewart in it and Sting. Yes.
Gurney.
Yep.
Yeah, I have seen it. It's been a while though.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen it enough times that I could probably reference a lot of different things for it. Oh, and I've also read the books. So.
All right. Cool.
Anyway.
So. Next.
Mike from the internet says, a boy with a stick. I'm growing to love Raffi's quips. This episode entitled Absolute Candor was true to its namesake from the very beginning, and it was full of tender moments, even with Narek and Soji. It was refreshing that Zani called Picard on his dislike of children and to see how much he has softened with age. He clearly struggles with remaining emotionally connected to people who feel connected to him. His connection with a young Elnor was so tender, a side of Picard we rarely saw in TNG. He was very emotionally attuned to Elnor, which set the stage for Elnor to later feel abandoned by him when he was recalled. And when he returned, Zani called him out on letting his failure to achieve perfection in rescuing all Romulans lead him to abandoning the ones he did save, a major theme of the entire show. We are getting a picture of a man who withdrew from most everyone in this version of Picard, a Picard that gave up but is now trying to make things right. He didn't admit it, but it's clear Picard felt guilty for leaving Elnor and was back to try to repair the damage he'd done before he dies. This was also subtly conveyed in his brief exchange with Raffi. I have to mention Seven of Nine's dramatic entrance. Loved it! She passes out with the best of them. Overall, this was the most visually appealing episode thus far, from the presence of birds and butterfly-like insects to a planetary shield to monitoring comm traffic of Picard's presence. They really brought a visually dynamic quality to visiting another planet that counteracts the sterile environment I came to dislike about many of the TNG episodes. Side note, I'll let others comment on the creepiness of the Romulan siblings. One last comment. Thank you, Brian, for making me hate every close-up shot of Narek. I cannot unsee his teeth. Well, that's all for me. I love the podcast. Keep up the great work.
Yes, the teeth.
The tooth. Oh, yeah. That was hilarious.
All right. Next is Glynis from Toronto. She says, I haven't been posting any feedback for the Picard series yet, but all I could yell out for this episode was the Borg. So I'm waiting for the next episode tonight in anticipation. I assume that meant for Seven of Nine.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Well, I hope you liked it as much as I did, Glynis.
All right, so we've got a couple of voicemails, actually. Our first bit of feedback is from Carlton from Atlanta.
Hey, this is Carlton from Atlanta. I called to comment on your Star Trek Picard podcast that I've been enjoying, and I heard an interesting feedback. Somebody talked about how great it was when you describe things very descriptively that might help the blind or visually impaired, and I wanted to call and just tell you that I'm visually impaired myself. I've been legally blind for 24 years. I have progressive blindness, so it still gets worse every year. And I watched all of Star Trek up until the movie Into Darkness. And at that point, I'd been legally blind for many years, and I saw it with a friend who described most of it. I could only see it a wee little bit. I found it kind of ironic that it was called Into Darkness as I was plunging into darkness. And then to further the irony, the next Star Trek movie, as you probably know, was called Star Trek Beyond, which was completely beyond my ability to see it whatsoever. And so and by this point, I'd already given up television for years. And so I decided, you know, I'm going to let the rest of Star Trek go. You know, it's all new stuff and new people, new characters. And I'm just not having that opportunity. I've learned to let a lot of things go. But then Picard came along. And, you know, it's the continuation of The Next Generation. And, you know, I watched that live in my early 20s as it came out week by week. And so I've turned to podcasts, and, you know, I've still not seen any of it. I don't have any plans, you know, to try, but I listen to y'all describe it, and it's really helps me follow along with the story. I'll admit I listen to probably a dozen podcasts where people talk about Picard. So if you look for it, it's really out there, but it's fantastic for those of us. You probably wouldn't think you have a big audience, and maybe you don't, who want to listen to your podcast who have not seen Star Trek Picard. But I wanted to call and let you know, join the podcast. You do have some audience that are just listening to you and not able to watch the show. So thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Well, of course, we have to play our Showcase Award. Thank you so much, Carlton, for your feedback. It's really good to hear from you. And don't be a stranger. All right. I thought that was some really interesting feedback for us to get, and we will try to describe things. I know one thing that we'll have to spend some time describing this week is the Stardust City. that was a visual treat, to say the least, and I have that already in my notes, so we'll talk more about that. But Todd, who we haven't heard from Todd with Picard yet, but Todd is another one of our listeners, at least on Discovery, that is visually impaired. So it's interesting to also hear from you, Carlton. So yeah, I guess there are a number of people that listen to us and don't. Like, I'm not surprised, or I knew that there would be some listeners that, you know, just don't get CBS All Access or Amazon Prime, you know, outside of the US and Canada. You know, maybe they're listening to podcasts to try to get an idea of what's going on in the show. Maybe they'll buy the DVDs or the Blu-rays later. So, you know, that I'm not surprised about, but visually, needing that visual interpretation, I am surprised about, but I'm delighted to hear from it. So, yes, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks. It was awesome.
Yeah. All right. So now we have to move to a subsection of our feedback, which is called errata.
Incorrect.
So, first of all, this is in our errata section, but this is not really errata, but something that Fred discovered. And, you know, it was something that I noticed, but I did not comment on it. But it was something when she's watching that video of Ramda on the desk, we see a picture there of Soji and Dash together. And so
I didn't see that at all.
He's got on here a little thing about that.
I didn't actually see that at all.
No?
No, I didn't see that picture. I was too focused on their faces. It was enthralling.
Yeah. I had seen it, but I didn't clue in to actually say anything about it. So I guess I didn't feel it that compelling, because it's like, of course she would have a picture, even if they never actually knew each other. But of course they do. Then he says, I made a little mistake in last week's yeses. I wrote that I was absolutely candid about my opinion, whereas this should have been absolutely candor, of course, referring to the title of the episode as well. By the way, I think I'm rarely absolutely candid. Probably Brian and Ruthie will agree on that. Smiley face. And I said, unless it's pointing out mistakes on my blog posts. So.
That's funny. Yeah, and I'm not quite sure what Fred is talking about here, because I'm pretty sure it sounds like he's saying that he wrote absolutely candid, but he meant to say absolutely candor. But absolutely candid is correct.
Yes.
Whereas absolutely candor is not.
Yeah.
It's that whole English thing about verbs and nouns and stuff like that. So there's such a thing as absolute candor, but there's not such a thing as absolutely candor. You can be right. Absolutely candid, which is probably why we changed it when I was reading it, because anyway, so yes. I'm not sure what he was talking about. So we probably corrected it for you, Fred, so that you were using proper English. You're welcome.
That was something I was going to say is, you know, newsflash, we do occasionally correct things that people write. Well, I wouldn't say rarely or sometimes. We have to correct a lot of things that people say, because like we'll read something and it's like, what
doesn't make any sense?
Yeah. So we have to change it around to, you know, sometimes we do it on the fly and sometimes we do it ahead of time. And in the case of this, we changed it. So, you know,
yeah.
Sorry, Fred.
We don't change content. We just edit for clarity, basically. Yes, so exactly. We want things to make sense. And we are pretty sure that we've interpreted what we think you mean to say. And we say it so that you sound smart. You're welcome.
Okay, so with that, we have a voicemail.
Hello, Brian and Rudy, and all listeners to Talk True Media. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback on the Star Trek Picard podcast number 8, which was about episode 4 of the series. First off, you were saying that the acting of Nerissa and Eric was very bad in the scene where she woke him up and the choking scene. Well, I think it's just bad writing and they are acting perfectly. If Jonathan Frakes, who directed this episode, had seen that it was bad acting, he surely would have reshot the scene. So this is probably a choice. Okay, another thing from the last podcast. You talked about 15 minutes. So from 77 minutes into the podcast episode to 92 minutes about the change in Picard and that you didn't like it. And Brian gave the episode an 8 because of that. Well, actually, I gave the episode an 8.5, whereas all my other episodes were less. But you gave me a very nice insight because you said something about that you couldn't understand that Picard went back to his vineyard, didn't take contact with Raffi, also not with the nuns and Elnor, and that you miss the old Picard and that you hope he will get back. Well, I don't know. I think this is just real life. He is so hurt that he got like this. So this is the real Picard. And he is a proud guy and somewhat arrogant. It's not how you like him, but it's realistic. And that is, I think, one of the things Sir Patrick wanted from this series. Just not portraying that old perfect Picard you want, but just a very human-like portrayal of this figure and showing the other side of him. And actually, that is worth much more points than the perfect Picard from 7 seasons of TNG. And actually, you say later even that he is acting as a child. And you're saying that you have not contacted some of your family members in Canada yourself and regret that a little bit. Well, the insight you gave me was that when I was about 25 years of age, I was in the board of a student association and I put a lot of effort in that association for 3 years. Even it influenced my studies, so I had to do 1 year over. So I was very much into that association and did a lot of work for them. And then something happened there and I got very much insulted and hurt by other people in this association. And I just stopped. I stopped my membership. I stopped everything. And I was so disturbed by it that I even could not emotionally. And we also had our own building with a bar in it, etc. I even could not set a foot in that building for around 8 or 9 years. So actually, I think that's what Picard did. He was so disappointed by Starfleet, by Starfleet's attitude, by they accepted his resignation, that he just finished his life there. He also said, the dreams are not so bad, the waking up is. And he also says something about it's like he buried himself in his vineyard for the last 10, 14 years. So he just quit more or less life. And he even didn't have the spirit to go in a like 24th century Red Cross to save the Romulans. I think the disappointment Raffi had with him is the same disappointment you have with him. She wanted to go on in another way, but he didn't want that anymore. It was just finished. And I think that's a very interesting part of the story, that he will get his life more or less a little bit back here. One last thing of last week's podcast, Brian said,
well, Fred didn't bring it up. He didn't bring it up in his voicemail, so I'll bring it up here. I am reminded of Orphan Black and the Tatiana Maslany portrayal of all the clones in that show. It's very similar.
And have a listen here to what I gave as yeses for episode 3.
Fred is next. He says, the fact that we finally get a new EMH, including his humor in a Star Trek series, and even a clone one, that gives my Orphan Black heart a boost.
But if you like me mentioning Orphan Black every podcast, I have no objections. I'm just kidding. And thank you very much that you promoted actually this show and mentioned Mark's podcast about it. People who know me know that this is the show of my life and it's actually the reason you hear me here. Okay, that was all. Saying nothing about episode 5, but I will put that in my yeses, nos, and not good enoughs.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Fred, for that voicemail. And about it, it was a 4-hour podcast, Fred. And what I mean by that is the raw recording was 4 hours, 1 minute, and 57 seconds. Okay. Sorry that I forgot that you said that.
Well, yeah. Okay. So nothing from him about the episode, just all about last week's podcast and
pretty much
screwed up. Okay. Well, sorry about that. Newsflash. We aren't perfect.
Yes. And that's why I made an errata subsection because of that. So anyway, look, we're not perfect and doing these podcasts take a long time to do. So
yeah,
I don't think the listeners need any more about that because they obviously know. I will say this and I will talk a little bit more about this later on. Over the week, I read the novel that came out from Una McCormick titled Star Trek Picard, The Last Best Hope. And I will say that it made me appreciate last week's episode quite a bit more. I wouldn't say that it was like, you know, went from an 8 to a 10 or something like that, but it probably went to an 8.75. So much better score on my end. It made me appreciate things. I think it was a little hard on it for some things. And I have a better insight of what Picard had to do going on with this whole Romulan rescue effort. And he had it pretty hard. The effort was long. It was grueling. It was tough. So anyway, you know, it's one of those things, and I know one of the commenters later talks about, like, it sucks when you have to refer to things that are outside of the show to get more insight, but nevertheless, I think that it was helpful for me just to put things into perspective, but even if I hadn't, I think I would have appreciated it a little more after a rewatch, so. But as far as the other stuff, we don't have to agree on stuff. So that's, you know, it's fine. You have your opinions, we'll have ours, and that's what this is about, just exchanging them. We don't have to agree, though. And a 14-year depression, though, that's a long time. But yeah, I can't be one to comment because it has been about that amount of time since I've had contact with some of my relatives. And then again, they haven't tried to call me, so, you know, it goes both ways. All right. Edwin from Arizona has one little small comment. He says, great show. You guys make it feel like a community and we all are partaking. It's nice. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And we get a nice little question from him later on.
That was our goal.
Yes, that's always been our goal. We are the hosts, but this is very much a community show. So you guys are just as important to it as we are. All right. I guess I'll read the next one. That's from Donna from the fellow state of Florida, or should I say a fellow resident of Florida?
Floridian.
Yes, fellow Floridian. She says, you and Ruthie were discussing Picard's hubris on entering the cafe and looking for a fight. I agree with you that he was looking for a fight, but I think it was for different reasons. Clearly, he's carrying around lots of guilt. You have the lost Romulans abandoning Raffi and now coming face to face with this lost child, Elnor. He might think he needs to be punished in some way. I mean, he's been living a pretty cushy life. What better way to do it than instigate a fight? In addition, it's important to note that he has been making some snap decisions. Maybe it's the perspective of a person who feels like he's running out of time.
So this was from Facebook, and I replied that those are good points. Perhaps he was trying to punish himself, but I still don't really, to me, that doesn't seem like his style, but I don't know, maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, I tend to think he was trying to prove a point, but what I could not tell for sure is Elnor and how Elnor fits into that. Like, was he just trying to instigate things to get Elnor, or was he trying to prove a point? And it could have been both.
I don't know. People talk a lot about how perfect Picard was in TNG and how they like it that he's not that way anymore. And frankly, I'm not quite sure what they're talking about, because I didn't really think he was perfect in TNG, honestly.
No, I didn't either.
He had his flaws. He aspired to perfection, which I guess is an admirable goal to me. So I don't really understand why everybody says, oh, it's so nice to see him not being perfect. I'm like, I don't know what show you were watching, but I did not see a perfect man. I saw someone who struggled to be perfect and to be the best version of himself that he could be. But I don't see that now, which is why I'm so confused. So There you go.
Well, in that case, I think he's someone who has kind of resolved, you know, he said it in the first episode that, you know, he was basically waiting to die, I guess. And I think that maybe he's kind of snapping out of things. But what I was going to say is this show seems to talk about his hubris a lot. And it also came up in the novel. And I've got more to say about that, but I'm going to hold back and say it later. In our notes about the episode. She continues, she says, well, everyone has been noticing he's not the Picard that they're used to. This is a different Picard who is definitely carrying some emotional baggage. At this point, I don't really see that he has some established confidant. He's shown in the past that he's bottled up his feelings, like when his family died in the fire. His mental stress may just be seeping out, and unfortunately in self-destructive ways. Just a thought. I think you've got a couple of points there. The doesn't have an established confidant. I think Laris and Shaban kind of fulfilled that some, and I know that Raffi did, and you can kind of see a little more of that, like, past relationship kind of seep in this episode when they're talking. But this is definitely something that we see a lot more in that novel I was just talking about. But they worked very close together in those years while they were trying to rescue the Romulans. And I'll just say this one thing. The Romulans did not make it easy. They didn't make it easy on him, and they didn't make it easy on themselves. But anyway, I think that your point about, like, bringing up the family dying in the fire, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I watched that clip today because I was considering using something for that for a clip. He did all bottle it all up and didn't, like, share it until Troy, you know, kind of got him to finally admit what was going on. But yeah, so maybe this is some of what he's done. But the other thing I would say is that Picard seems to be showing that he's kind of, like, maybe compartmentalized some of what happened, you know, 14 years ago, and hadn't really dealt with a lot of the issues. You know, he'd been kind of in a stasis pattern, I guess. I don't know.
Well, that's definitely a coping mechanism that I think probably people who suffer from PTSD use. I don't know. Frankly, I'm not a psychiatrist. I have no idea anything about that kind of stuff. I just know that is a coping mechanism. Let's just say that. So,
all right, next.
James the Augmented Sailor says, I'm about halfway through the cast, BM and RR. I just want to say, BM, take some deep breaths. I think it's too early to go to yellow alert on writing choices and story arc as of yet. I just want to remind everybody, this is a redemption arc for Picard. So far, we're just seeing what a single action has done, not only to himself, but its effects on those in his life. I'm going to say this again. I love that we're seeing some fallibility within him. I'm sure this was definitely a choice on Sir Patrick's part too. It makes Picard more human. If that's one complaint I had about him on TNG was that he was too perfect and why Sisko was always my favorite captain. They showed Sisko as more imperfect on DS9. As I said in my feedback, this was the weakest episode, in my opinion, this far, but we're only 4 episodes in. RR, I think his arrogance comes through, but that it's also unintentional. Remember, this is a guy that took his ball and went home for 14 years, dejected and kind of humiliated. I think he's trying to make himself become confident again, and it's just coming through as arrogant. He's trying to recreate himself, and it's a slow process. BM, you made mention that isn't the Picard is supposed to be, and I think we're going to see him return to form eventually, but there are just things he's got to work out for himself. Data's death, Starfleet not holding him in the regard he may have thought, his disenchantment with Starfleet, and the potential Iromatic syndrome. His world is totally different now, and that's a huge weight to bear. I think the biggest thing on this show is that nobody is used to seeing Picard this way. No one is really used to seeing the Federation and Starfleet this way either. We caught glimpses of it in DS9 and perhaps some in Discovery. This show is highlighting all of that. You guys made mention of humanitarian organizations in the Federation, if there is still a need for them in the 24th century. I think the social climate at the time of the Romulan evacuation wasn't very favorable toward them. Plus, they've got domestic issues of their own going on with the synth attack on Mars and the fallout from that. I think the sentiment within the Federation was to be focused on that and be too concerned with their oldest enemy, which I think also goes to why the attack happened in the first place, be it Jat Vash or Section 31 or some other organization or collaboration of organizations, to take the focus away from helping the Romulans. Okay, I feel like just because there's one attack doesn't mean that people who are doing one thing suddenly stop and go, oh, no, we have to do this. I mean, you see that globally now. There are people who are committed to solving one atrocity or inequality or what have you in the world. And 9/11 happens and they don't drop everything that they're doing and run and go solve that problem. They continue working on the problem that they're working on.
Right.
So I don't think that that would have anything to do with anything. If there were people who were working on evacuating the Romulans, they would have continued doing that regardless of whether or not there was a synth attack on Mars, in my opinion.
Well, plus, I can't imagine that only Starfleet would be involved with a rescue attempt. And even if Starfleet abandoned the rescue attempt, you would think that NGOs would still exist in the 24th century and they would be involved from a humanitarian perspective. And there's some talk about money and whatnot. And apparently money doesn't exist in the Federation, but money's needed to deal with things outside of the Federation. And supposedly Stardust City is not in the Federation, but I have some info about that later. So anyway, I still think that there would be some Federation Red Cross or something that would be involved, but you could also argue the fact that one of the tenets of Starfleet is humanitarian missions. So maybe in the Federation, Starfleet is the Red Cross. I don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was something I thought of after the fact, a couple of days later. It's like, yeah, maybe Starfleet is the Red Cross.
Yeah, who knows?
So
he goes on to say, I totally see where you guys are coming from with the concerns on this show. It feels very far removed from TNG with its politics. It's so much less the utopia than we're used to. I'm finding it so enthralling, though. Sure, there's little nitpicks here and there, but I'm absolutely loving it, warts and all.
Well, kind of mentioned about the novel already, but it also helped me solidify some things about the politics within the Federation. So there was just one little tidbit, and I don't think this is too spoilery, but there is a feeling that a lot of the policy and whatnot are basically the will of the founding worlds, Earth, Vulcan, Andor, and Teller. Those worlds control the policy within the Federation. Like, smaller worlds don't have as much of a say. Whether or not that's actually true, who knows? Because at this point in the Federation, there are a lot of other worlds many of which we know, many of which we don't. But, you know, like the Trill homeworld, Bajor is part of the Federation in 2399. And I don't know if that's specifically been said, but we saw like Bajoran already, and we've seen there's supporting evidence to it. And a lot of other species, Bolians, and we see the Bolians in this episode, actually. So Beta Zed, that's another world.
Yeah.
You know, so whether or not they get as much of a say, I don't know, but they're definitely well represented, at least in Starfleet. So I don't know. All right. So that's it. Oh, I will say at this point that you will get this too late, but we are doing a Patreon call Saturday, the 22nd of February, and we'll be talking about Ruthie went to go see Shatner and the Wrath of Khan last Friday. We'll obviously talk about the first five episodes, and I will talk about reading the novel, and I think there will be some other people that have read the novel, so we'll talk about that too. So you'll be too late to join in live, but if you become a Patreon member, you'll have access to that recording. So that's at patreon.com/Brian and Ruthie. So anyway, this week, season one, episode five, Stardust City Rag, is written by one of the co-creators, supervising producer, Kirsten Beyer, and it's directed by number one, Jonathan Frakes. The description from CBS.com has the grammatical error, Ruthie. It is the La Serena crew.
Oh, yeah.
Begin an unpredictable and lively expedition on Freecloud to search for Bruce Maddox. When they learn Maddox has found himself in a precarious situation, a familiar face offers her assistance. And that's TVMA with language and violence with the air date of February 19th, 2020. And of course, that was Wednesday, and it actually was released about 2:09 a.m. Eastern time. So on the West Coast, it was still the Wednesday the 19th. So as far as Spot the 47, I don't have any.
Aw. So sad.
I didn't really get a chance to look, so there may be some. All right. So Ruthie, what did you think of this episode?
I enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was fun. So I'm going to go with an arbitrary 9.
Okay, arbitrary ranker you. So did you like this one more than last week?
I think yes, a little bit.
All right.
I don't know. So hard to say. I can't. I don't know. Sure.
Well, I had issues last week, and, you know, I've worked through some of those, but just in terms of an episode, I enjoyed this one a lot more. I thought it was a lot of fun, had some humor in it, which has been lacking from the first four episodes, so I appreciated that. I'll give it a 9.4. It's not just your baby, it's our baby. What? That was something that they said in the reproductive center.
Oh.
Yeah, I thought that was very like, creepy.
What? Oh, goodness. That is amazing.
All right, so we've got some listener ratings. Edwin from Arizona says 7.9. Are we still pretending? I see what you did there, Edwin.
That was good. James the Augmented Sailor says, Stardust City Rag gets 9.6. I thought I looked appropriately sinister. Why do you think I have this outrageous accent, silly British cunnigots? I fought in your general direction. I could go on, but I won't.
Yes. Good old Monty Python. Brian from Hawaii says, I give Stardust City Rag 9.5 out of 10 gruesome eyeballs. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. All right. Fred from the Netherlands says, 47 out of 59, approximately 8 out of 10 cookies on fire.
Steve from Oklahoma City says, 9 out of 10, you need a feather in your hat.
Yeah, that was funny. Jim from Florida says, I give it 7 out of 10.
Andrew in Edmonton also says 7 out of 10 cartoonish French accents.
Very good. Very good, monsieur.
Thank you. Mon fille. Anyway.
Jeune fille.
Yes. Yes. Jeune fille.
Jeune fille. Yeah. Which, by the way, is young girl.
Yes.
En français. LT from NC says, I'm giving this one an arbitrary 9 out of 10 with two umbrellas in it.
Rick from Cleveland says, I love this episode. 9.8 villains that look a little too much like Deanna Troi out of 10. Huh. Really, even the thing in her hair looked like a Deanna accessory from season 1 of TNG.
Oh, that's funny. I didn't see that at all. And I don't know if anyone else said it or if it was just Rick, but I feel like someone else said it too. I don't know. But I didn't get that at all. But that's probably because I've seen that actress in other things before. So to me, she's a well-known actress. So I didn't really see the connection. But
yes,
I can see how they look similar. But I think that's due to ethnicity, not really anything else. So,
well, I do see a resemblance, but not as much as some other people have seen. But that's I don't know how to say her last name. Nakar Zendigan or something like that.
I don't know.
What I know her from the event. She was in the event, and I know that she's on NCIS New Orleans. But yeah, she's a well-known actress.
I can't remember what I know her from, but let me pull up her. Oh yeah, I don't have any idea how to, but Nakar Zadigan.
Yeah.
That would be my off-the-cuff pronunciation.
A beautiful woman of Iranian descent, but
yeah, she was on Extant. That could be where I recognize her from.
That's right. I remember that too.
She was also on Emily Owens MD. I know I saw her. I remember seeing her from that. Something else that she was in here recently, and I cannot find it off the top of my head. In any case, yeah. So I've seen her in a few things. Oh, she was in Legends, another show I watch. Major Crimes. Harry's Law. Various and sundry undercovers. So, yeah, she's been in stuff. And, oh, yeah, I think I also remember her from the event. And, of course, she was also in 24, probably playing a terrorist. But, anyway, yeah, I thought she was great.
Now, Dahlia Hassan. I did not watch the show, so.
I did.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, she was probably a terrorist. I don't know. I can't remember specifically, honestly. I don't remember her specific character in the show. So, yeah.
Stability loss was due to an impact by a subspace interface pocket.
Anyway, moving on. I think she's awesome. And let's move on.
Lastly, Aaron from Akron only gave it 4 out of 10. All right. So we have some yeses.
Yes.
James, the Augmented Sailor, he says, I think there will be a lot of people that disagree with me, but I love the Jurati twist. It adds depth to her character. Seeing her deal with the inner conflict between the information that Commodore O obviously gave her and her feelings toward Maddox instantly took her from being the quirky, fun sidekick to one of the most complex in the show. I can't wait to see this unravel. Yeah, I agree. I didn't really see it coming. I mean, I thought that she was probably, I was expecting her to be like a Manchurian candidate or something like that, like be turned on or something, but I did not expect her to do what she did because basically seemed like she was doing it at her own will, right?
Yeah.
Icheb and the mention of Quark. I was never a fan of Icheb on Voyager. To me, he was one of those shoehorned in kids on a show that just wasn't necessary and kind of annoying. Using his relationship with Seven as fodder for her motivations on this show were great, though. I also liked the callback to the Voyager when they can't find Icheb's cortical node during the harvest. They couldn't find it because he gave it to Seven in the Voyager episode Imperfection after hers had failed and they discovered he could survive without it. Seeing more backstory on Rafi and getting some questions answered on this show. Yes, I agree with all of that. And it added some dimension there. Obviously, the years have been harder for her, but not just because of addiction, but also obsession, you know, enough to drive her away from her family and that. So
I think she has an addictive personality, which leads to obsession.
Yeah.
Obsessive behavior.
Yep. I think I understand that personality quite well. All right, next.
Brian from Hawaii says, yay for the Icheb cameo and the Quark mention. The scene of Rafi with her son Gabe was very well done and added depth to her character. And I must say, Picard's acting was the best we've seen yet in this series, despite the fake French accent.
Yes, well, despite the fake French accent, well, you do realize that he's playing Picard there. It's not Patrick Stewart's bad French accent. It's Patrick Stewart playing Picard playing a bad French accent. So it's a little meta there.
Well, I'm not sure that... I don't know. I don't know whether or not it's Patrick Stewart doing a bad French accent or Picard doing a bad French accent, but I really hope it's not Picard doing a bad French accent since technically he's French. Oh, goodness. Mercy.
Well, I think he's doing like a French accent, you know, a mustache twirling villainous
over the
French
top accent.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, that's what they're trying to do in general is yeah. be over the top. So that's,
they are. You know, that's true.
Oui, oui, monsieur. Anyway. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Oh, my goodness. So true. Fred from the Netherlands says, the acting of Jerry Ryan and the role, the writing of Seven, I was a little worried, as you could imagine, but she is beyond my expectations. Jerry as well as Seven. The personal 3D free cloud advertisements, free cloud ambiance and wardrobe.
That remind me of Minority Report. I think they had something similar with that. They had like, you know, you'd walk by a poster and it would start advertising to you.
Yeah, it would scan your eyeballs and recognize you.
Yeah. So, but that's exactly the kind of thing that you would see in the 24th century, almost 25th century world, if commerce and money were still a thing, that's exactly the kind of stuff. A Quark-inspired world. So, and...
That's definitely true.
That's my big question that comes out of this episode, is so if we went to Stardust City again, would we find Quark there? Because Quark definitely has a presence. So, because he wasn't just mentioned, he has a bar. So the question is that his only bar or is he franchised?
I think he's probably franchised.
I would
by
think
now.
So. Yeah.
I mean, that's my guess. I don't know.
Yeah. Jim from Florida says, Icheb's dissection, even though they changed actors, side note, the original actor played in Star Trek Renegades. Seven's and Picard's discussion of finding humanity. Yeah, I like that too, actually.
Me too.
Picard finally gets Maddox and finds out where Soji is and why. All the Easter eggs, including Quark. Yes. Actually, that was one of my big yeses in this episode. In fact, I mentioned it earlier, but if you, Ruthie, if you scroll down a page or so, I did a screen capture, and when they first beam in, there's a few things we see in that image, and I heard, you know, some people have mentioned Blade Runner in this, and it's definitely that, but it's like, reminds me of several things. But you see Quark's bar in that image. You see to the left of that, you see Dabo tables mentioned. So I don't know if that's part of Quark's or if that's something else. We see Mott the barber has Mott's Hair Emporium. And then the last thing we see is we see this like hollow image of an Orion slave girl, which, you know, that's an old TOS and Enterprise reference. And actually, in the Short Treks as well, we saw Orion's. Actually, not just Short, season one of Discovery. So, yeah. But there was a whole bunch of things like that, and the mention of Quark and the mention of Voyager, and that was all good stuff. So,
yep. It was pretty awesome. I also enjoyed all the Easter eggs.
All right, next.
Okay, Andrew from Edmonton says, my simple yes is the fact that we did not spend any time at the artifact. If I had to see one more date between Narek and Soji at Pop Tate's chocolate shop, I just might throw something at my TV.
Andrew. I agree.
Me too. Not a fan.
Yeah, I needed a break from that. Daniel from the UK, he says, so Detective Picard made his way to the CD club in an elaborate plan to find the missing professor, only to have been betrayed by an old acquaintance. Then the professor dies after imparting the needed information. Betrayed. Well, Seven and Picard did not know each other. So if that's what you mean.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah. Yeah, I am sure. They know each other by reputation, but they've never really.
They've never met.
Met.
That's, well, yeah, that's a little different, but okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not like they don't know each other or know of each other, but they don't have firsthand knowledge of each other. They just know each other by reputation.
Right. Anyway, they've never met.
They've never met.
That's what it is.
Speaking of, Dr. Agnes finally has the turning moment I thought might happen a couple of episodes ago, but I'm still saying she's not bad, just that there's more to see about her. I don't think she's bad. She may be misguided.
I don't think she's bad either, and I agree with what you're saying there.
Yeah. So perhaps Dodge/Soji are part of Agnes's DNA and part Data? That's possible. You know, maybe the flesh and blood part?
Yeah, and kind of weirdly creepy. I'm not sure I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, and there's more to be said about that part in the novel as well. So I should get a plug for plugging the novel so much this episode, but it was really good. I'll just say that.
No kidding, you should.
Yeah. But now she's been shown by Commodore O that the Jatvash destroyer myth, Raffi and Rios gossiping put me in mind of Crusher and Troy talking about the ship in TNG. Okay. All right. Next.
Next we have LT from NC. I'm not sure what this is, but he says Tranya.
Oh, Tranya. That is
Tranya.
That is the drink from the Corbomite maneuver. That's the one of the first episodes of TOS, and the little guy that's played by Clint Howard, he invites Kirk to drink Tranya with him. Yeah.
Okay, that is quite a throwback. That I knew she said a word when she offered him a drink, but I didn't have any idea what it was.
Yeah, Tranya.
Okay, Tranya. Tranya! Exclamation point.
Yes.
Exclamation point. He says.
Baylock loved his Tranya.
All right. The two females in the white dresses along with Mr. Vup. If you're going to have goons, why not have well-dressed ones? Bejazel, just for a second, I thought it was a de-aged Marina Sirtis. I really liked her as a villain, but I guess she was Game of Thrones'd.
Yeah.
That's funny. I think they just have similar features, being from that area of the world. I don't know. But anyway.
Well, I have some information later on about Bejazel that people may find interesting.
All right. Oh, Agnes. What are you up to? The snap turn from the cookie baking with Bruce to basically pulling the plug on him. Guess we get a hint of what Commodore O told her. I want to know exactly what was so bad that she had to kill him for it. And she says that she has to atone for making Soji and Dodge. Is that because Commodore O is a Romulan who buys into the destroyer mythos?
I think so.
Okay, well, she is a scientist. She shouldn't be swayed so easily.
I definitely want to know what this Conclave of Eight is, though.
What is that?
There's something that Gabe mentioned to Rafi. The Conclave of Eight.
Oh, yeah. She said that, or he was saying that was her.
Yeah.
One of her. Yeah. All right. Anyway, going on, he says, I love the way they teased us with Maddox and then ended up bumping him off. I hope there is a payoff for that one. Elnor being the awkward teen space elf.
I love that.
Rios the space pimp. The scene in the bar made me laugh. I agree. I laughed as well. I thought it was funny. And I like his little trying to dance to the music, but it was so awkward. I was like, oh no, just don't. It made me laugh.
Yeah. The thing that they did on the ship where he was like trying to, I don't know, talk in a Spanish accent or something. And
I think he said something in Espanol. I don't know.
Yeah.
And it wasn't English.
Just like,
I know. They all just turned and walked away like, Yeah. You just do you.
Yeah.
I mean, if a kid grows up with absolute candor, he's not going to easily be able to portray a different role.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Anyway, I agree. Awkward teen space elf. That's hilarious.
It is funny.
In the ready room thing, he said he got called Space Legolas. I think our listeners call him Romulan Legolas, but, you know, same thing.
All right. Well, it's time for our yeses.
All right.
What you got?
I thought it was hilarious when Elnor says, I didn't get one. I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, I did.
He's all disappointed, like, hey, wait a minute. Everybody else got one. I didn't get one. Oh, that was cute. Cute and funny.
Yeah. Besides that, I mean, I like the humor in this one. I like the kind of like Ocean's 11 kind of, you know, caper or heist kind of thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
I like that it had like a mission. You know, some of the other episodes didn't feel like it had a mission. And I think that it was a lot of things to a lot of people. It was violent. It was, you know, we see a vendetta or, revenge factor. We see like some mystery, some suspense going on. We see heartbreak. You know, I would definitely put Rafi in that, and 7-2 from the flashback. So it had a lot of stuff going for it. And I didn't have anything specific other than it was a nice change of pace.
Yeah, I agree with that. I guess my only other one would be another Easter egg, so to speak, if you will, the old school Romulan haircut on Gabe's wife. I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So now we go for nose.
No!
James the Augmented Sailor says, Brian Brophy not reprising his role as Maddox. The actor portraying him did a fine job, but it just wasn't the same. And Brian from Hawaii said something similar. He says, also, it looks like the actor who portrayed Maddox is different. Boo. And we've talked about this a bit, but my understanding is that he's no longer acting, but I do agree with you. And, you know, I would have also had this in my nose because his performance in The Measure of the Man, I thought was great. And it would have been great to have him in again. But my biggest issue with it is the guy that they had looked nothing like Brian Brophy. Like, his hair was all different. Like, this guy had curly hair.
Super curly hair.
Yeah. Brian Brophy does not have curly hair.
Yeah. I also wrote that down somewhere.
Yeah. It took me out of the scenes a lot. Like, because I did not want to believe that this guy was Maddox until it was staring me right in the face. And they called him Maddox and he responded.
Right. I agree. I was like, what? I mean, that guy's a fine actor and everything, but I mean, couldn't they have picked him to play a different character? One that wasn't supposed to look like someone who was cast from, or a character that was cast 30 odd years ago? And, you know,
I
mean,
he's not the first, like, I can think of that one character from Game of Thrones that got recast, and the guy that,
right, and look completely different, and no one had any idea who that guy was until they started calling him by a name that we were like, wait a minute, what? Yeah, that guy.
It's very similar. So, yeah, it took me out of the scenes. Like, I thought his portrayal was fine, but I think they should have at least made the guy look a little more like Maddox. I mean, yeah, put him in a beard. I mean, 30 years have passed, but...
Right, but maybe put some relaxers in his hair.
Yeah, because he was really curly, like insanely curly hair.
I mean, and nothing against curly hair. It's just hair doesn't usually change like that.
Yeah, yeah. So for that, I have to give casting a... He did a fine job.
I agree.
He did a fine job acting. I didn't have a problem with his acting. Just
right.
Get a guy that looked more like the original character.
Yeah, give that guy a different part.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's too late exactly. Now.
One thing that I did is that I went looking for an explanation because, of course, it wasn't just him, wasn't just Maddox, but Icheb was also played by a different actor.
Uh-huh.
So I looked at Michael Chabon's Instagram, and he did post something about this episode. And so I started looking in the comments, much like he did a couple of episodes back where he posted something and then he was answering questions in the comments. And this one guy asked him, he said, just sad the two legacy characters were or had to be recast, especially if this was their character send-off. Were the original actors invited and declined? Michael Chabon said, it's complicated. That probably sounds like a cop-out, for which I apologize, but at least it's the truth and we'll have to do. So, I mean, I would have liked him to actually say what happened, but I do appreciate that at least he gave some kind of context. But if I had to guess, and I don't know for sure, but maybe those two actors don't have their SAG cards anymore. And of course, they need to have their Screen Actors Guild cards to be able to do things in Hollywood. So
maybe they didn't want to get them. And so they couldn't reprise. Maybe they didn't want to reprise. Who knows?
And in the case of Brian Brophy, I know he's a professor at Caltech. So maybe he's just too busy or maybe he just doesn't want to go back to that. I mean, I did see a couple of videos where he's featured in YouTube where he's like talking about different things that he's doing with his students. He seems pretty happy doing it. So, you know, maybe he doesn't want to go back to Hollywood. So
I don't blame him.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I would have loved to have seen him back in the role, but sometimes you can't have what you want. So
yeah.
And in his case, he didn't have, maybe it wasn't what he wanted. So you got to respect that.
Right.
And it has been 31 years, so.
Yeah, I mean, that's some time. That's a grown person.
Yep.
ago. So.
Yeah, and even the guy that played Icheb, I mean, that was, what, 19 years ago? So still, that's a long time ago, so.
20 years ago, I think.
Yeah. Last part. He says, why didn't Raffi show the evidence she had on the conspiracy to her family? I know it's sensitive information, but it's obvious the cabal behind the conspiracy didn't see Raffi as a threat to dig into her family. Sharing what she found may have saved her relationship with her husband and son. Unless that is, her theory was a crackpot drug-induced delusion. I'm guessing that she got the whole theory or figured it out after they left. So that was my take, but I have a feeling that if there was a conspiracy, they probably discredited her, and that's how they dealt with her. So they, you know, made her, they kind of took her personality traits and they kind of worked them. So, and you never know, like maybe there were people working on her family to discredit her. You know what I mean?
Maybe.
And I don't mean like physically or like drug induced or anything. What I mean is people planting seeds of doubt about her to them.
Right.
Well, thank you so much, James. Let's move on.
Brian from Hawaii says they killed off Ichab and did so in a very gory way. It's sad to learn that Seven has lived her life since then as a vigilante and has become a killer. Everything related to facers was poorly explained, and I really hated the 70s pimp clothing they wore. Picard's French accent was horrid, especially the first time he used it, saying, appropriately sinister.
I already talked about that, but...
yeah.
It's not Patrick Stewart's French accent, it's Picard's French accent. Okay, Picard's French, I get that, but anyway... I mean, think about it. He seemed pretty bad acting when he played Dixon Hill. And of course, Patrick Stewart could play that role, but he's not playing that role. Picard is playing that role. And Picard's not a very good actor.
So he says. So anyway, he says. He's very good at coaching Data on being a better actor, though. So I don't know.
I thought so.
I wrote because reasons, and I really can't figure out why now. I think it had to do with Seven living her life as a vigilante.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea why I wrote that now, but I didn't really think that that was... Well, anyway.
I loved the 70s pimp clothing. I thought it was funny.
I thought it was hilarious.
I thought it was funny, you know, so... I thought
it was funny and fun.
Yeah.
So there you go. To each his own.
Yeah. Jim from Florida says, Romulan Legolas is supposed to be the universe's best fighter, yet does nothing, and is completely clueless. I will not fight you on that one, because he was kind of clueless.
He was, but I don't think he did nothing. He didn't have anything to do. I mean, yes, he did nothing, but that was because he had nothing to do.
The completely predictable betrayal of Dr. Jurati. Well, I mean... predictable that she betrayed. I didn't see it predictable that she was going to kill Bruce Maddox, but you may disagree. But so I'm not surprised that she betrayed. I just didn't see her killing.
I was not surprised at all that she killed him. Honestly, she was looking shady. That's all she was doing that entire time that Picard was talking to him. She was just in the background looking shady as hell.
And it seems like that nervousness that she was saying about the transporter, I guess was nervous that she was going to kill him, but it was kind of misdirection.
Maybe she was doing misdirection. I don't know. But yeah, it was kind of like, okay.
And by the way, and this is something that is evident if you read the novel, but I didn't think it was as obvious. I mean, you could have suspected it, but Dr. Jurati is a medical doctor, not just a cyberneticist doctor. So she was a medical doctor. So that's why she is treating Maddox and not the emergency medical hologram. Just in case you were wondering, people.
All right, people.
The Picard, the Frenchman with the horrible French accent. Jurati, a brilliant cybernetist who in book is also ex-Starfleet, is terrified to operate a transporter. Well, that's the thing. I don't think that that's what she was, that's what we think that she's terrified about, but I think she's terrified about actually killing Maddox. We just think that it's about the transporter.
Yeah, I think she's redirecting herself.
Yeah.
She is putting her terrifiedness, I don't know how, if the, what the,
yeah,
what the noun is of terrifying, verb, whatever.
Yeah.
She's putting her terrification, she's making it seem like she's terrified of, you know what I'm saying. She's making it seem like she's terrified of the one thing, when in fact, we think that her psychological distress is due to her impending decision. There. I said what I'm going to say, and that's all I'm going to say.
Lastly, the complete Star Wars Episode 2 feel of Free Cloud. Okay.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, people have compared it to so many different things. Blade Runner, Star Wars, fill in the blank sci-fi thing.
I liked it.
I didn't really have a problem with it.
Yeah. Next.
All right. Andrew in Edmonton says, the whole opening scene, just because we are streaming and can do more swearing, body horror, etc., doesn't mean we should. In the latest episode of Doctor Who, we saw a Cyberman crush a woman's head. Actually, we didn't see it, but we know it happened, and we can experience the horror of it without actually seeing an eyeball being yanked from someone's head. I agree. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. I've said that before. I'll say it again.
Daniel from the UK says, it's in the nose, but he says, no-ish. But really, it's still great. It's sad to see Seven slipped into a darker path after Voyager, but that Picard is still a model of hope. Ichev was never my favorite, but he never deserved that. I would agree with that on both counts. He was never my favorite either.
Yeah. I don't know that I necessarily had specifically strong feelings about him any which way, but I can definitely see why Seven went on the road that she went on.
Yeah. Rick from Cleveland, I would like to be able to say it was good to see Ichab again, but it wasn't. That was horrible. It was Negan-level horrible. Oh, maybe that was some inappropriate laughter there.
Ah.
Actually, since he brought up Negan, I thought it was more Terminus horrible, but okay, Negan too, now you think about it. Baseball bat.
Mm, it was definitely horrible.
Yeah. What about you? You have any notes?
Well, honestly, I don't really have any no's, I think, specifically, but I have to disagree that Elnor didn't do, when someone, whoever said Elnor did nothing, I don't think he did nothing. He just didn't have anything to do.
Yeah.
I don't know if I said that before, but I do think it would have been better if he had been the one to shoot Vup, but he was guarding the other two, so...
Yeah.
Oh, what are you going to do? But I mean, his whole, the whole reason he was, I don't really know why he was there. Honestly, they kind of should have left him on the ship, to be quite frank, because they were all praying that he didn't do or say anything to give them away. But they should have, if that was really the case, they should have just left him on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, they weren't there to be in a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. They weren't expecting Seven to go all rogue, whatever.
Myself, I guess my no's would be that I was sorry to see Seven of Nine go. Hopefully that little token or whatever the heck it was that she gives Picard will give her a chance to return. But I was kind of sad because I hope it's not like one episode and the last 10 seconds of an episode and out.
Yeah, I wish it was more too.
Yeah.
I guess I was disappointed. Really, and I don't really know if I could qualify these as no's, but I was disappointed that they brought Ichab in and then killed him immediately. And I was disappointed that they brought Maddox in and killed him off immediately, but I was not surprised about that,
yeah,
about his death. I was surprised that they killed Ichab.
Yeah.
But I guess that was giving Seven the impetus to make the life change that she did.
Yeah. I guess I would agree with both points there. I thought it was a bit convenient that Jurati was able to shut off the medical hologram so easily in the middle of an emergency. You know,
my issue with that was she should have turned him off immediately rather than letting him stick around and figure out what was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, she was like, deactivate EMH. I'm like, what? Come on.
Yeah. But hopefully the EMH will report to Rios what he saw.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, surely he has memory from one deactivation to the next because he has portrayed as much.
Yeah.
So I don't really understand this whole motivation thing. And I don't know, I guess we're talking about this now instead of later, but I don't know that she necessarily thought this through. I mean, how exactly is she going to explain this? Especially when the EMH says, hey, this was happening and then I got deactivated. So,
well, I mean, she is a cyberneticist, so she's able to reprogram, you know, or remove the memory out, but still, you got Rafi there, who also conveniently is kind of sulking, which understandably sulking. I mean, I didn't have a problem with how that story went down. I thought that was actually really well played, that whole thing. And I didn't see, you know, I was thinking that she was going there to get high. So I appreciated the fact that she wasn't going there to get high. She was going there to meet her son. Wow. But still, I thought that, and the other thing I thought of is, this just an aside, but this is, I brought it up, her son and his Romulan wife, it seems like, are going there, I guess, for some kind of like interspecies fertility or whatever. But I don't think I would trust it there at Free Cloud. That whole thing about it's your baby, but it's our baby makes me think that nefarious things might go on over there. Cloning and taking genes away or eugenics.
Yeah.
All sorts of things possible there.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I guess the other thing is that, similar to what you said, that, you know, how you would think that, like, within the first 5 minutes of the next episode that they're going to discover what Jurati did.
Yeah.
And if they don't, they better provide a good explanation of how that's possible that she isn't discovered.
A real good explanation.
Aside from that, I don't have anything else. So let's move on. It's time for...
Not good enough, damn it! Not good enough!
James, the Augmented Sailor, says, could have had a little more backstory on the Seven and Jay's relationship. It seemed to just scratch the surface with it in this episode. I really hope it's abandoned after Seven's revenge. There was kind of a hint at some kind of, like, dating slash like relationship, not just friends. There was a hint at it.
What are you talking about?
That Bejazel or whatever her name was and Seven had some kind of like.
Jay is Bejazel, not John Luke. I was like, what
yeah.
the hell?
Because he's talking about after Seven's revenge. So
it's late. That's my only excuse. Good times. I want to see Seven again. So
I hope we will next.
Brian from Hawaii says Stardust City Rag reminds me a lot of Blade Runner. Again, the series is straying into the visual look of other franchises. Also, the ex-Borg hunter. Bajail SP looks like a deep fake doppelganger for Deanna Troi. I found it very distracting. And I put Bajazel so close on your spelling. But yeah, that's a tough one. There are a lot of consonants in there.
It's the future. It's not just the future, Ross, but it's the future from the next gen era of Star Trek. So it's not surprising that it would be different looking, but also I have more information about this, but it is not a Federation world. So even though it has a name like Free Cloud, it is actually not within the Federation itself. Whether or not that's like, you know, humans that have settled there, it is not a Federation world. So I guess I'll bring it up now. This is also something that Michael Chabon talked about on that Instagram thread. Michael Chabon says it's in a region of the beta quadrant that borders the old neutral zone. And that's one thing. Seven of Nine mentions this in the episode. The neutral zone is no more. It no longer exists. It was actually dismantled.
Right.
As well as the Federation and the former Romulan Empire, but was never claimed by either and has remained officially neutral. Remember when you consult your Star Atlas, and he actually refers to Larry Nemechek on there, that you are always looking at two-dimensional sections of three-dimensional space, which renders the whole notion of borders, as we tend to think of them, somewhat problematic. So yeah, the maps are always two-dimensional, but there are potentially pockets of area that are not in along the border. So,
right.
Jim from Florida says, Girardi killed Maddox before getting any info on the nest, which O surely would have told her about. Yeah, whether or not O requested that she get that information, though, is one thing. You don't know.
Is another thing.
Yeah.
Who knows?
The show still requires a reference to a book to understand plot points like collapse of the neutral zone, the extent of Maddox and Girardi's relationship. Yes and no. Like, the book certainly does help, but there is enough there. I mean, we do see that scene that Girardi's looking at with the video of Maddox baking the replicated ingredients, making right. cookies. She's crying while she's watching it. And it still doesn't explain why Borg parts are so valuable.
Nope, it does not. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Jim, but I think maybe it's a wait and see kind of a thing. Like, maybe we will understand later why the Borg parts are so valuable. At least I'm certainly hoping so, because I feel the same way about that. I'm like, that was a terrible, horrific death for someone, and completely unnecessary. I think Seven is right. Like, not even a mercy killing. I mean, come on, lady. Terrible human being.
And I'd like to know who that was doing all the drilling, because that wasn't Bejazel.
No.
So obviously, Bejazel's
lackey.
Lackey.
Yeah.
Toady.
Toady.
All right, next.
Next, we have Fred from the Netherlands says, using the editing trope again of showing what happens on Free Cloud, interspersed with scenes from before, e.g. the preparation of their visit. The Quark Easter egg was very nice, but on the other side, it feels a little bit too much on purpose, just to please the fans.
I don't agree with that, because based on what I saw at Free Cloud, if Quark wasn't there, he should have been. Like, if not Quark, then some other Ferengi. And for that matter, I would have liked to have seen some Ferengi in this episode. I think that would have been a nice touch, but yeah, we didn't.
No. And I'm not sure that I agree about the, like, just, like, I don't know that there's anything wrong with putting something in just to please the fans. I mean, why not?
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt. If it doesn't hurt, then why not?
To me, it was minor, and it does please fans, and if it wasn't there, then you'd annoy fans. So, you know, why don't we see this? Why don't we see that? And it's one of those things that's like, you know, you mentioned Mott's Hair Emporium. Well, if you didn't know Mott from the Next Generation, you wouldn't care. So, you know, why not put it in?
Right.
It wasn't like it was a big plot point.
Right. And then he says, again, the thing I promised not to talk about anymore, but I think I have a partial explanation, but it is surely not all of it. I noticed that Sir Patrick's face is just a little more expressionless due to old age. That's just a thing that happens when you're getting older. Neurological degradation and facial muscles atrophy. Eyelids are more hanging, etc., etc. You can clearly see this in the opening credits just after his face is puzzled together. I did a little experiment with myself after watching a scene in which I found the acting not 100%, e.g. the discussion with Seven in the beginning of the episode, not the ridiculous French guy. I replayed the scene with Seven with my eyes closed, and I only listened. It became much better on the emotional feeling level. Well, there you go.
Well, Okay, there we go. So maybe Patrick Stewart's eyes aren't as expressive or something.
Maybe they're not able to be as expressive.
And it is worth saying that, you know, because Patrick's playing a character that's 92 or 94, depending
and on... And is himself 80-something, so...
Well, yeah. I think he's 79.
Still. Okay, whatever.
I don't want to call him an octogenarian if he's not quite octogenarian, you know? He might get complex over that.
Oh, come on.
He'll be 80 this year.
Okay.
So
there you go.
So, you know, rounding up. But anyway, he is doing the show with very limited makeup, and he's doing that to try to show the age. And I've seen some content, you know, podcast and videos about that. Like, he's basically playing it almost with no makeup on. So maybe they could make his eyelids less droopy, yet he's not trying to. So you may have a point there, Fred, but I think it's okay for him to age. It's natural. And at least he's not getting, you know, ridiculous facelifts. Because
yeah, then he would definitely not be able to emote.
And for that matter, I don't think a facelift Patrick Stewart would be able to play Picard. It would just look really strange.
Yeah. Yep.
Andrew in Edmonton is next. He says, I have a feeling that Fred is getting some good ammunition for Patrick Stewart's acting this week. Picard playing the French broker was laughable, and the simple ease they were being able to infiltrate Bajazel's place of business was ridiculous. Even Jabba knew he was being played. Okay, so... Two things there, I would say. The French broker being laughable, I mean, it's like we said, it's a meta thing. So I'm going to disagree with you on that point. But the point I can't disagree with you, they were able to infiltrate that Bajazel's thing pretty simple. Yeah.
I mean, it was an old Starfleet trick.
Yeah. Yeah. It was quite simple. Quite a little too simple to be able to. So, yeah. Next.
Yeah. Next, we have LT from NC who says, before I go anywhere else, I have to say it. What in the blue hell is up with these guys and eyes? We survived a season on eye needles in Discovery, and right out of the box, we get eye pliers in Picard. That scene in the opener just about put me off my lunch. I cannot disagree, LT. That was pretty off-putting.
Yes, I know LT talked about his displeasure with the eye needles in Discovery. And yeah, the eye pliers. That wasn't, you know, I may have to get eye surgery this year. And that doesn't make me very, makes me kind of nervous.
Yeah, I'm not super squeamish about like stuff coming close to my eyeballs. I mean, if they're not pointy, but like I'm talking about like when I go visit the eye doctor, I don't freak out. Like some people have a real phobia about that. I just don't. But I am not a fan of all this attention being paid to the eyeballs.
Yep.
It's too much.
The last is Rick from Cleveland. He says, my not good enough. Why is Raffi holding back? She knows things. She has theories even. Her son knows about the Conclave of Eight. Come on. I cannot disagree with you on that. I have a feeling that that was set up to mention the Conclave of Eight either next episode or the episode after. So
I think it's a lack of confidence thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
Or I kind of feel like maybe she knows stuff, but because of things that have happened, she's now unsure of herself. Maybe she's starting to second guess herself. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have any not good enoughs?
Well, yes, I do actually. So while I do feel bad for Raffi, and I do, I realize that this is the reason why she's going to be on the ship/mission/show. I feel like she kind of gave up on reconciling with her son super easily. I mean, he was like, no, I don't want to see you. And she was like, okay. And she left. I mean, come on. What child is not going to immediately say that and then hope that the parent actually sticks around?
Well, I have a feeling that we're going to see him again. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, when they have their child, is it going to be that he sends her a picture or they make contact again or maybe...
Gosh, I hope so, because honestly...
Or once Rafi, you know, cracks the scandal or whatever, maybe they'll patch things up. I don't know. I mean, obviously the relationship with the father is done. Like, her ex is probably not going to want to go back with her, but definitely maybe they'll patch things up at least a little bit. The only thing I had was one confusion near the end there when they talk about that they're going to go to the artifact and the artifact is in Romulan space. Rios says to Picard that, you know, his fee's going to go up, and then Picard reacts and it was kind of like, you know, old man or something like that, right? And what I didn't understand about that particular section was, were they kind of just joking about the fee, or is like, oh, come on, whatever, and he wasn't serious, or was it that Picard has all the money that he needs because of the winery, you know, selling the wine to, I don't know, Free Cloud or wherever that has money, or, you know, selling Kurlon Neskos's or, you know, his little eBay archaeology trade. So is it basically that Picard's got a lot of money and money's not a big deal? Or yeah, is it?
I think so.
Yeah. I wasn't really clear on which way that goes, but it could go either way. So that's it for me. Do you have anything else?
No, I don't.
All right. So now it's time for our feedback section and open hailing frequencies. Our first is a voicemail from Cyberman.
Hi, Brian and Ruthie. This is Cyberman for Star Trek Picard, Episode 5, Stardust City. I'm going to give this episode a 7.5, raising a glass to poor Icheb. I was actually very upset and still am upset about the death of Icheb. I am a huge Voyager fan. I know inconsistencies, plot holes, etc., but I would follow Janeway anywhere. So I was very upset at the death of Icheb and especially how he died. And I completely understand. And it is in keeping with Seven's character that she killed Jay. Because after all, Seven is pragmatic. Being Borg, she has a little less, she's not as worried about death. But Icheb was very special, and Seven was always protective of Icheb. So this follows. This is a mother avenging or killing the person who tortured her son to death, basically. So this was really upsetting. And this is the reason for my low rating, because I'm still angry that they killed Icheb in this manner. The highlight of the episode was Rios. Rios is, you know, the guy is just so Starfleet. He is Starfleet with an edge, but he is Starfleet all the way. Picard was so right, he could smell it on him. Absolutely. Rios could be put on a bridge today and he would fit right in. So I really like him. So that was fun. Elnor was fun as well, because when he realized they weren't pretending any longer, he figured that out and he took up weapons and started protecting them, which is what, you know, really is his job. So another plus. Another positive was the fact that we got confirmation that it was not the Romulans that destroyed Utopia Planitia. It obviously was this conspiracy, this circle of eight that Rafi mentions. Now, the thing that lowers the rating for me is the fact that it took so long for them to bring this up. Now, Picard did mention that she had some interest or some conspiracy or some feeling that it was Starfleet that was involved when he did go at first to see her, but he did not believe her. So this not only cost Rafi, it cost her her family, it cost her her Starfleet career, but even Picard did not believe her. And she is obviously right. And it will be a redemption story for Rafi. That's where this is going. I found this a little too predictable, and I was a little annoyed of the fact that I didn't get more hints prior to this episode. The other thing is Dr. Girardi. What on earth did I always want to sing her name. What did she say to Dr. Girardi to make her kill someone she not only loved but respected? Or she not only respected but she loved. Oh my gosh. How do you kill them? And she did. She murdered him. So what do you say to her? Could it be the end of all sentient life? Are they going to tie this to Discovery? Are they going to bring up, since they already introduced us to the archives, first or second episode, I can't remember exactly when, since they already introduced us to their extensive archives, well, what happens if someone got a hold of some of the Discovery archives? Anyway, I'm wondering if that's where they're going, but honestly, I'm still really upset about Icheb. And I sincerely hope we see more of Seven, because she was definitely a highlight of the episode. It was really fun to see her. Anyway, thanks, guys. Have a great day.
Well, thank you so much for that great voicemail, Cyberman. As usual, great to hear from you. Poor Icheb.
Yep. I completely agree with what you were saying about it's logical that she did that. I was not surprised at all that she turned around and went right back and was like, blammo. And because that was basically, she thought that was her child. And homie, don't play that. She was not gonna, nope. And it's not just about, I think it's not just about an eye for an eye kind of a thing. It's the utility of the matter. You did this, it was terrible, and you need to pay for it. Not only that,
and it seemed,
but go ahead.
It seemed like she also betrayed her. Like it was Bejazel, like not just did that to Icheb, but she was played, like Seven was played by Bejazel, and
right,
was all to get at Icheb
and her
and her.
But Seven escaped. She escaped. And to me, it makes sense because she is, like, Picard's calling her a vigilante. But as she said, what law? They are not in it's not a Federation world. It's not a Federation territory. I mean, like, this, you know, not Federation space. So they are the law. And to me, she was carrying out what amounts to a bounty. And she is basically a bounty hunter, I think, more or less. So made sense to me. I was like, yep, that happened.
You know, one thing I guess I probably should have brought up earlier, and I just thinking about it now. Two things, I guess, was already asked once, but what's so valuable about Borg parts?
I want to know what's so valuable about Borg parts that they have to be extracted painfully while the person is still alive without any aesthetic.
Right.
I mean, is there some benefit to it? Is that the reason why they have to do it that way? Or are these people just horrible, sadistic monsters?
I think the latter.
Well, then, in my opinion, they deserve to die.
Yeah. The other thing I'm curious about is, Maddox sends Soji to the Borg artifact, but I never really got the reason why, unless that's like the new Romulan headquarters or something.
I think it was to determine why the synth attack.
Yeah, but that's what I don't understand. It's like, why would that have to do with the synth attack?
I
don't know. Yeah. But,
got me.
I think the fact that there is a conspiracy is definitely the case. A conspiracy.
There's a conspiracy out there. You know what I'm saying? There's a conspiracy. A C-O-N conspiracy.
Always a favorite.
That makes me laugh every time.
I think you're right, Cyberman. Yep. This is a redemption story for Rafi. It, all signs point to that. And I really want to know, like, was she pursuing that to the point where the thing in the flashback where she said she was fired, maybe she wasn't fired. She was just like
reassigned.
And then her pursuing it got her fired. And, you know, she was, like I say, she was discredited. And
that makes more sense.
Yeah. That's what I'm suspecting. But, you know, and that's kind of why I said before a couple episodes back about that cold open, like the fired thing probably didn't happen that way. It was probably over the course of a couple of years, you know, they reassign her, then she's pursuing something that, you know, she's ordered not to pursue.
Well, I think also it could be, okay, so she is, I mean, I think she's basically like an attaché to the Admiral, right?
Right.
So if
she's first officer on the Verity.
Right, which I'm going to call attaché because I like that word. So that's her position. And when he steps down, she no longer has that position. So in a sense, she's getting fired from that position.
Yes.
So I think that we're all agreeing the same thing, that she wasn't necessarily fired from Starfleet, but she's no longer in that probably prestigious position anymore. So, and then you're right. I think, yeah, then you, what you say, she goes on and then gets her ass canned.
I think she gets reassigned, that she continues to pursue it. They, you know, they tell her not to, she loses her credentials, and then she probably, you know, spins out or quits on her own. And knowing her, she probably continued to pursue it, and that's where she lost her family in the process. I could imagine something like that, but
yeah.
But I totally buy the whole idea of there being like a whole strategy to discredit her.
Yeah.
Makes total sense. That's all I've got.
Okay.
All right, let's move on. So we've got another voicemail here from Jeff.
Hello, Star Trek fans. This is Jeff X-Force 11 with my feedback on the most recent episode of Picard. I think they should have called this episode Everybody's Got Ulterior Motives. And I thought it was very telling how they kind of choreographed Agnes's descent here. And I'm interested to see some background to know what this Romulan group showed her and what it means. I think that aspect of the story is intriguing. What would cause her to kill the doctor that she loved and basically she worked with to create these two scents? It's just very intriguing that way. It was also cool to see 7 of 9 in kick butt action. And I really, really, really hope we get to see more of her, like joining the crew on a permanent basis. But there were some, yes, cheesy aspects to this episode. The whole heist gone wrong was kind of cheesy, but I am enjoying this series. I want to see more. I just think maybe they could tell this story a little more logically or a little more put together than what they're doing. But overall, I am enjoying it. Those are my thoughts. X-Force 11 is out.
Well, thank you so much, X-Force 11. I still can't get used to calling that. Jeff, thank you so much. She can't be done, right? She can't.
Dr.
7 of 9.
Oh, 7 of 9. I hope not.
Because she's been in all this press about the show.
Yeah.
For her to just be here for like, you know, one episode and 10 seconds of another, I can't see it. She's got to be there for longer than that. Otherwise, what's the point? I would have to think that before the season's out, we'll see her again, maybe a couple more times.
Yeah. I want to see all of the former Borg that we know and love, Q, 7.
Yeah, definitely.
That's it. Back together again, because each of them is dead. So
right. That's
it. I got nothing else.
Any other Voyager Borgs?
I mean, they did. There was that whole kid collective thing, but I don't think any of them stuck around with Voyager the way that each of them did.
Right. All right. So next, we've got a question from Edwin.
Hello, Brian and Ruthie. This is Edwin again from Arizona. My question is, do you think Picard knew from the beginning that there was something kind of shady about Agnes, and he was just waiting for the right time to see what she was going to do? And that's my question. And thank you again. Bye.
Well, I'm going to give you a little showcase award since it's a short one. Thank you so much for the question. And now it's time for the answer. No.
I was going to be my answer. I don't think so.
No.
I don't think that he knew or suspected.
If he did know, he wouldn't have left her alone with Maddox. So,
yeah.
I definitely think that Picard trusted her. Obviously, you know, that little seed in episode 3 where Raffi didn't vet her obviously comes back to bite him in the butt. And it was telegraphed right from that.
It was telegraphed from that, but then it was also telegraphed like big time from the expressions on her face that we could see that they could not.
Yes.
It was like, oh man, this girl.
Yeah, she's going to do something. What's she going to do?
And then, oh, she did it.
Yeah.
So like I said, sad that they killed him off so quickly, but not at all surprised.
Right. I agree. All right. So last but not least is Steve.
Steve from OKC.
Steve from OKC.
Hey, Ryan and Ruthie, it's Steve, and this is for episode 5 of Picard. I just want to give a few notes because I don't want to go too long. I really loved this episode. I loved everything about it. The fact that we get this kind of away mission, and it's kind of a heist kind of thing, but then you have the twist at the end with Seven having a deeper connection with Bejazel, and then, of course, Dr. Girardi, curse your inevitable betrayal. But couple of things. Seven's comment about not that she wasn't giving up there at the beginning was really great and very kind of almost a dig at Picard because he gave up. And then I laughed every time Rios said Seven, the ex-Borg, Fenris Ranger from the Delta Quadrant. thought it was really, really great. That little conversation between Rios and Raffi while Picard and Seven are in his study there was just classic. And of course, you know, before the end of the episode, Girardi is still kind of the audience kind of thing of the audience perspective, which I really like, and absolutely was really, really cool to realize through the conversation, through what Seven said, that she has a habit of being a hero. When Raffi asks why she's doing what she's doing, and she says it was out of habit, something had to be done. I just really loved that whole comment. And then, of course, at the end, when she gets her revenge, and we know from this, you know, it may have been wrong to murder Bejazel, but it's still Seven being that hero, even though it's kind of an anti-hero, kind of a dark hero. Just absolutely loved it. Can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Well, thanks so much, Steve, for your voicemail. Some good points. I thought that it was also funny with Rios trying to say her name.
Yep. Yeah. 11. So close. Different show.
Was it wrong for her to murder? I don't know. Was she murdering or was she executing?
She was executing.
That's my take.
Because the Fenris Rangers have been after her for a really long time. So she was fulfilling that.
Right. And if they're like judge, jury, and executioner,
yep,
then I guess that's true. Did she deserve to die? Yeah, I kind of think that she did.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
No doubt about it. She's a horrible, terrible person.
Yes. Although she may not be a person. That's
besides. Whatever. She's a horrible, terrible thing then.
Yeah. Sentient life form. I'll explain that in a bit. I have some stuff about the episode section that I'll get to this. All right. That's it for our voicemails. Our written feedback now. James the Augmented Sailor says, this episode was so great. To me, what the last episode lacked was made up for in this episode. We have an answer on where Girardi's disruptor came from during the shootout at the chateau. She had it with her, and the shootout was obviously a ruse to get her embedded with Picard's team. That would mean the silly writing trope about the sniper missing Jaban because he bent down at precisely the right moment wasn't a silly trope at all. The sniper waited for just the right moment to make it look like a lucky miss to set the events in motion.
I don't know about that. So basically you're saying that all those guys were sacrificial lambs. They were the suicide squad, basically. Come on. I mean, I know Romulans are hardcore, but I'm not sure that they would just send people off to, okay, you're going on this mission to die. Bye-bye now.
Yeah, it definitely seemed that way.
I mean, yeah, they all had the acid cyanide pills, but that's a little different than I'm planning on dying this mission. Not, oops, I got caught. Now I'm going to off myself.
Yeah.
I don't know. That seems a bit of a stretch. That's all I'm saying.
Yep, I agree. All right, continuing, he says, I love that we get a bit of explanation as to why planets in the neutral zone and Romulan space have pretty much been abandoned. The Federation is taking care of its own, the Romulans are taking care of their own, and they're working together to remain separated. This also solves the money thing. These planets aren't part of the Federation. While people within the Federation may not need money, people like Rios that may have to go outside the Federation and aren't Starfleet simply need it to get around with planets that do use it. Picard is becoming more and more confident in his decision-making. I'm sure that those that question his acting will just say, eh, his acting is getting better. I wholeheartedly disagree. I also like that when he went a bit over the top in his acting, like the sinister character at Stardust City, it shows us as the omnipotent observer that he's a good guy playing a bad guy, as well as giving a wink to the silliness of the original casting if a Brit to portray a Frenchman that has admittedly said he can't do a French accent. Yes, and we've already seen that he can't speak French either. I personally feel like this was a choice Sir Patrick made on how to portray that scene. I totally agree. That was by design. How believable would it have been for Picard to play it with a brilliant French accent? It wouldn't work because you've got this Frenchman who talks like a Brit. So I agree with you, James. I personally feel like this was a choice Sir Patrick made on how to portray that scene. Although I'm sure we'll hear some negativity about how it's bad acting. Yes, yes, we have. Not to point fingers at anyone here, but I'm sure it will be brought up by, well, oh, so he's, I thought he was going to point it at some of our listeners, but instead he's pointing at it among the toxic fandom like old Buckethead. That's, of course, Doomcock. Not to give him a name, but we have to. One thing I'd like to see explained next episode is Maddox's death. How is Girardi going to cover her tracks, and how will the crew not be aware that some foul play happened there? Exactly. Especially with the deactivation of the ETH and EMH when they both sensed something was up. I'd give it a no or NGE, but it was the end of the episode, so we'll see what comes of that. It may quickly become that no or not good enough, depending on how it's handled. Can't wait to hear everyone's thoughts. BM, RR, I'm guessing we're in for another long ride. Smiley face, smiley face.
I said, I'm pretty sure it was the EMH she deactivated both times, not the ETH.
Yeah, the ETH has like this long, like woolly hair. So it's definitely not the... it wasn't the ENH, it was the EMH in both cases. He reacted to a psychological emergency and...
Yep.
And a
psychiatric emergency.
Right, right, psychiatric.
Yeah. And well, he reacted to a psychiatric emergency both times. Then the second time he was like, oh crap, what are you doing? Yeah. Also, I think you're really wearing out this whole initial thing. Just because JL puts up with it, that doesn't mean we will.
Yeah. Don't call me BM again. I have enough trouble with my own bowel movements. I don't need to be reminded of it.
Oh, gosh. Or we'll be asking who shot JR.
Yes. Yes. Old Dalit's reference, but in your case, James, it fits.
In your case, James, we're talking about you.
Yes. I'm sure we will talk about it on tomorrow's Patreon. So you'll hear about this. But we said this beforehand, so.
Oh, you'll hear about it, and then you'll hear about it again.
All right, that's it.
Okay. Next, we have Brian from Hawaii, who says, I'm really enjoying the last two episodes much more than the first three. Being in space and having missions to complete brings this closer to Star Trek. I can't wait to find out just what Agnes was shown that forced her to kill Maddox, someone she obviously loved. I'm still wondering just why Borg implants are so valuable and who wants to buy them, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am also disappointed that they stretched the clearly two-part opener into three episodes because I agree that it just didn't work out as well.
Yeah, it's almost like this stuff should have been a short track or something, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. They should have just left it as two. I don't know. It didn't work.
Like that whole conversation in front of Starfleet headquarters could have been a short track. And the attack could have been a short track.
Mm-hmm.
Just like offload that stuff and keep the... Yeah, I think it should have been
two.
Yeah, I think it should have been two episodes, that first three. And does this mean that we're going to be shortchanged an episode? Or,
I think so. Which yeah. is what also super irritates me.
I hope not. Hope they're going to lengthen the next five or something. Because they're
so
still,
far,
I
that
mean,
has not happened. So.
Yeah, they've all been in that same range. This one was 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Again, they're taking advantage of the wrong things.
Yeah.
In other words, the swearing, not the extended or possibly able to be extended time slot.
Mm-hmm.
Disappointed.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say that you enjoyed the last two episodes much more than the first three, because I was looking at your ratings, Brian, and you gave the first episode a 9.9. So unless it was out of sentimentality, which, you know, I'll give you a break on that. I'm just saying.
Or it was completely arbitrary.
Right? Or completely arbitrary. Yeah, see, Ruthie can help you throw that arbitrary card, so. You know, I'm just saying you gave it a 9.9. Don't forget it. And from the book, I can say that, yes, she definitely did love him. She seemed to worship him in the book. And I think that she was heartbroken when he left, because obviously he left and, you know, didn't take her. But at the same time, I think that he gave her. Yes, he did in the book. Again, this is spoiler, I guess, but. She could have left with him, is what I'm saying.
Okay, well, let's not give out too much, because some of us haven't had a chance to read the book yet.
You should get to read it, Ruthie.
I will. As I have previously stated, I'm in the middle of a different series right now, and I will read that as soon as I'm done.
That's no excuse.
Shut your mouth, Bill.
Okay.
Anyway, moving on... Brian continues with, stepping back, I worry the Picard series is getting too dark and explicitly mature like Discovery was in season one. My kids watch this with me, and I hate that now I'm having to screen it first like I was for Discovery. Just because the showrunners can curse and show violence doesn't mean they have to do it so often. I agree. As I have said, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
I'm of two minds of this, and... I'm kind of surprised, actually, because I was expecting you to bring this up way back in episode two, because I had you in mind when I brought up the whole F-bomb thing back then, because I remember specifically you complained about that quite a bit in season one of Discovery after they cursed. So I'm of two minds, as I said. Now, I've got it written in the notes as against and for, but I'm going to flip that around. And just so you know, I understand where you're coming from, and it makes me sad. It really does when someone like you, and not just you, I've heard this mentioned on YouTube and on other, you know, Facebook groups and that, when someone says that they, you know, wanted to watch Discovery and Picard with their kids and they feel like they can't. And just to show you where I'm coming from, I talked about this actually this week on another podcast. I had recorded a podcast a few weeks ago and it finally got released this week on Trek FM, the Patrons Roundtable. We talked about the first couple of episodes on there, and I talk about that on that. And I spoke for you and other people in that episode, Brian. I said the same kind of things. I was disappointed that they did that. And I kind of was disappointed when I first heard them throw the F-bomb, because I'm kind of like, oh man, can't they learn from that? But at the same time, at this point, you know, and I've read and watched things that like Chabon has said and Akiva Goldsman have said about it. Goldsman and Frakes were on the Deadline podcast about Picard this week talking about it. And I realize that's not what you want, but this is an adult drama. It's rated TVMA. So it's not a watch it with the kids show. The content is not watch it with the kids. So like my take on it is that if they did it in a more kid-friendly way, they couldn't cover this particular subject matter. Or if they did, it probably wouldn't be as good. That's not to say that they couldn't make a good show or even a better show that didn't have this adult quality. And, you know, in some ways, again, to take your side, I think they're like stabbing themselves in the foot a little bit, because I think to get that wide consensus show, you know, that people will talk about, I think that they need to do this and they need to cover these things, but they don't. So I pulled something that Michael Chabon said on Instagram. I'm not going to read the whole thing, and this is actually condensed from what he said, but I'll just read a couple of lines of it. He said, "I'm not unambivalent about the violence myself. The choice was not made lightly, though it was made collaboratively and with a good deal of conversation and debate among the creators. It's not there simply because we can, or because we're trying to be in, swearing like the in kids do," I think is what he meant, that he kind of is on the side of not doing it, but in the end, they decided as a team that they were going to do it. So it's just one of those things. And he also felt like with the violence, because they only had so much time to show that pain that Seven had portrayed, getting right in there and to show like this awful thing, he said that it seemed to make it come home a little bit. So anyway.
Okay. So then Brian continues. "Responding to your comment in last week's podcast, yes, I agree. Stewart delivered the 'I may not pass this way again' line expertly in episode 4. Like Fred, I'll stop complaining about this going forward, but I disagree with you that he was acting competently during most of the first 3 episodes. Questionable writer's choices notwithstanding."
Now, before we comment about this, I'm going to read you another piece of feedback that we got from our feedback form at talkthroughmedia.com/feedback. Because it's directed at us, not at you, Brian from Hawaii, or Fred from the Netherlands, at us. Krieger from Canada sends us a message, and they say, "I don't care if you guys wish to sit there and waste time complaining about acting. The important question is, do you find the story engaging or not? Do you want to see what happens next? If the answer is no, then move on. I, for one, am enjoying the ride. It's nice to be in this universe again. The characters will grow with the story, and hopefully CBS gives them the room they need to tell the story. Appreciate that we are getting more time with Picard. To complain too much in one season might be all we get." So basically, Krieger was criticizing Ruthie and me for criticizing Picard's acting. And I confirmed this in a reply, and yeah, they said that we were doing it. So just wanted to, you know.
Yeah, thanks, you guys. You're giving us a bad rap. FYI, that's not us. We are not complaining about the acting. We think the acting is fine.
we think the acting is great, not just fine, at least in right. my case.
Well, yeah, okay, great. But
yeah,
we're not the ones who think it's terrible.
Yeah.
Those are some misguided people.
Just because a few misguided people. Sorry. We know.
A couple you guys, of squeaky wheels.
Yes. Anyway, I sent Krieger a reply after receiving this message to just to make it clear that this was a few listeners that were complaining about the acting, namely Brian and Fred, not this Brian, but Brian from Hawaii and Fred, not us. Now, we did complain about the direction they had taken with the Picard character. Specifically, I did, and Fred mentioned this earlier, that I spent 15 minutes complaining about it. And, you know, I was a little butthurt, okay? That's, I'll admit it. But
I'm also upset about it. I don't like it.
Yeah.
So there.
Yeah.
Sorry. Not sorry.
I'm still disappointed in it. But, you know, then again, it would be a very different show if Picard was the same Picard that we knew back in, you know, 1993. But people do change, and obviously he was dealt a devastating blow, and that's all you can say. But to answer the question, the important question, yes, I find the story very engaging, even before this past episode, and I definitely want to see what happens next, especially after this episode, the way things end. It's like, oh, I was like betraying. Yes, wasn't surprised, but I was surprised that she killed Maddox. I was just surprised at that. So I really want to know what's going to happen next time. So yeah, we wouldn't be talking hours upon hours talking about this show if we didn't love it. So, but as far as the bad acting, let's just agree to disagree, guys, and move on.
Drop it. This.
Yes. Yeah,
I don't want to talk about it ever again. Ever.
Okay.
I'm over it. I'm sorry. I'm over it.
Like, yeah.
You guys think they're terrible. We think they're good. Every single episode so far, we have gone back and forth about this. It's terrible acting. Well, it's not terrible acting. Sorry, you guys are wrong.
Well, let's just agree that, you know, we don't have to agree with this. You guys don't have to convince us, okay? That, like, if you
and
don't
please stop trying.
Yeah, it's not going to work. Ruthie and I are stubborn individuals. We're not. We will. No, I'm kidding.
But no, it's true. We are.
I wasn't kidding. I was just being nice. So anyway, seriously, though, we don't have to agree. I think at this point, let's just move on. We're not going to try to convince you that it's great acting. You guys, stop trying to convince us that it's bad acting. This is not something that is objective. This is subjective. Right. It's opinion. And we have our opinions. You guys have your opinions. Let's just agree to disagree.
That are right.
Yeah. Don't.
Sorry.
Just don't. Sorry. Okay. Let's move on.
Oh, my goodness. All right. Jim from Florida says, in all, the episodes are getting better. The timing of each episode is starting to make more sense. And I'm still looking forward to next week's episode. So again, 7 out of 10.
Daniel from the UK says, Raffi's scene was incredible. I love how Picard knocked at her bedroom door and she was almost like a teenage daughter telling him to go away. The show just gets better. Same thing that Jim said. Yeah, and to that I would say, not almost like a teenage daughter telling him to go away. It sounded exactly like a teenage daughter telling him to go away.
Yep. Leave me alone. I'm mad. I need to sulk for a little while.
Yep.
I get that. Sometimes I just want to be mad. I understand it's not rational. The logical side of my brain completely gets that. But the illogical side of my brain is like, don't care. Just want to be mad.
Illogical.
Yep, that's exactly right. Sometimes it happens. Anyway, LT from NC says, there are no hard no's this time, just lots of questions. Is it just me, or is Picard, R. Picard, and Elnor the only ones without a hidden agenda? Maybe. The scene in the clinic was well acted, but so very painful to watch emotionally. Big props to Michelle Hurd for that one. I agree. She's a phenomenal actress.
Yep.
So Rafi's son has a Romulan spouse. Very interesting. Yes, that's how it appears, LT. I feel like that was a rhetorical question. 7 of freaking 9. I just hope this won't mean this is all we get.
Me too. Yeah, I hope that that's not going to be the case. Aaron from Akron has a very funny quip here. He says, see, if they disable Flash Java, maybe turn their security settings up a smidge, they wouldn't be getting those custom pop-ups.
Oh, that was funny.
Other than that, I love this episode. Frakes at his best. Picard felt more like Picard. Seven was perfect. I love this evolution of the character. I think it makes sense for her. Rios was well used here, and I enjoyed his scenes with Mr. Vup, a.k.a. Oddjob. Elnor's confusion was even perfect given how much he is a fish out of water and has been shielded from the world outside the nuns.
I agree.
I admit I am a little torn on what they are doing with Agnes. I get what they are going for. She knows whatever the Jat Vash have told or shown her, and she feels guilty over whatever it is. But to kill Bruce, who is clearly more than just her colleague, there better be a hell of a payoff to this secret. I agree.
I also agree.
Yes.
Again.
The standout this week for me was Rafi. She is quickly becoming a favorite character on the show. Her estrangement with her son, choices of a career, and conspiracy over family, all her imperfections. I wouldn't mind a short series of Rafi's history in Starfleet with or without JL.
I agree. I could go for a short trek for that.
Now, my question, that seemed to be mostly positive, but she gave it a 4? So,
oh, yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah.
What's the deal, Aaron, with the 4?
Was the 4 just what?
Because of the Flash and Java?
Or was it because of Girardi killing Bruce Maddox? I don't know. So that's my big question is where did the, unless that was a typo. So.
No, yeah. Maybe you meant to type 9. All right. I have to say I agree. I think this evolution of Seven's character was pretty perfect. She was always the most logical character on Voyager. And pragmatic. Someone else said pragmatic. I agree. To me, her being the judge, jury, executioner type is very pragmatic. Ain't nobody got time for long, drawn-out trials where people with XYZ resources might weasel out of justice.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, Seven specifically knows that she's guilty.
Yep.
She doesn't need any other evidence. Okay, moving on. Mark DeCote says, this episode felt more like a spinoff of Valerian and the City of 1,000 Planets. I'm enjoying this story, but it's not Star Trek.
Well, it's not the Star Trek that we're used to. It's certainly not Starfleet. I think this is the second episode in a row where we didn't see any Starfleet characters in it. So,
yeah. Well, not any current Starfleet characters.
Right, right.
Obviously, right. There are all former Starfleet characters on the ship.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But nobody current, so.
Nobody has a badge,
right,
so to speak.
I agree with that to an extent, but it still feels like Star Trek for the times. Things are complicated these days. So to me, I think it fits. But to each his own, I understand, you know, you and maybe other people don't feel it that way. I do want to see a coming back to that positive type of image that we get from Star Trek. So hopefully we'll get there. If they ever do a Pike series, hopefully we'll get it with that. Man, I would love, I've said it before, but I would love to see that be episodic with, like, you know, kind of like a more of a long-term, like, secondary plot going on, but episodic in nature, and to be positive. Because if anyone could be that, would be Captain Pike.
Yeah.
Played by Anson Mount.
I agree.
For those of you that have not watched Discovery, you know, if you have to skip that first season and just move on to season two and see Captain Pike, man, oh man, he's so good. He is so good.
Yep.
Yeah. So, all right.
Yep.
As far as other things, do you have any other notes? I just have a couple of a few quick things.
I have a really quick thing. I think that's it. The only other thing I wrote down was getting the hell out of here doesn't mean the same thing as it used to, I guess, because they stuck around long enough to have a chat and then beam Seven back onto the planet. So,
yeah, there you go.
Like, to me, getting the hell out of here means like instantly gone. Not let's get the hell out of here after I chat with Seven, give her some weapons, send her back down to the planet. I mean, come on, y'all.
Yeah, that's kind of true. Yeah.
I suppose that should have been a not good enough, but it wasn't really anything. It was just funny. I thought it was funny.
Yeah. Okay, so a bunch of little quick things. This show seems to be dealing with hubris. So I looked up what and the book also dealt with Picard's hubris. And of course, we get the sheer hubris comment that Admiral Clancy made. This is from Wikipedia. So hubris describes a personality quality of extreme or foolish pride or dangerous overconfidence, often in combination with or synonymous with arrogance. In its ancient Greek context, it typically describes behavior that defies the norms of behavior or challenges the gods, which in turn brings about the downfall or nemesis of the perpetrator of hubris. Hubris is usually perceived as a characteristic of an individual rather than a group, although the group the offender belongs to may suffer collateral consequences from the wrongful act. Hubris often indicates a loss of contact with reality and an overestimation of one's own competence, accomplishments, or capabilities. When I read that, I said, that's Picard.
Yeah.
So I have to commend the writers for identifying that characteristic in Picard, because in looking at this definition, that is Picard. You know, I don't want that to be Picard, but he does have that streak in him. And I think what happened to him 14 years ago was a classic example. He just took on too much. And when what he was doing was denied to him, it brought his downfall and brought the downfall of a lot of other things. I mean, there's like a whole, you know, domino effect that we're seeing more and more the last couple of episodes. The planet that Icheb met his demise on was called Vergessen. And Vergessen is a German word, and it means to forget.
Mm.
And that planet was on the Hypatian system, which is probably most certainly a reference to Egyptian philosopher Hypatia, who was a symbol for women's rights in the 20th century. So I think that kind of makes sense, the fact that I think Seven is kind of reclaiming. And there's also the seven domes on Vergessen. So is that seven of nine? I wasn't sure what that meant. We learned that La Serena is a Kaplan F-17 speed freighter. I thought it was also foreshadowing when Rios asks Agnes how he looks. She says, you're killing it. I noticed when Seven was beaming off La Serena, there's a modified Voyager theme that's playing in the background. If you listen to it, you can pick it up. It's like, And Maddox solves one mystery. Daj got the embedded mom AI. So mom is not a mom. Mom is a program. So that...
I'm pretty sure Soji has it too.
Yes. Well, we already... that, like when she called her mom and her mom immediately put her to sleep, that was pretty foretelling there. All right. So let's move on to shipwide announcements. We don't have much, but... Deadlines, Star Trek Picard podcast, which obviously they have ties to CBS. You know, they're sponsored by CBS, but they're obviously really sponsored by CBS, not like we are, which, you know, we have that, hey, go to talkthroughmedia.com/CBS and sign up. No, they're getting commercials and all that stuff on there. So, you know, they're special. Anyway, so I learned something interesting. It turns out that the character of, what was her name again?
Which one?
The Bejazel. Bejazel. Is that it? Which every time I hear Bejazel, I think Vajayjay.
That's what I was thinking. oh, that's so terrible.
I know. But I thought it was interesting to find out that originally the character was written to be Cation. And Cation, we've heard them, you know, mentioned before. We've seen them a little bit. Like, I think they were in Star Trek IV in the background. But in Discovery, that one guy mentioned a Cation roommate. Anyway, Cations are, there were some characters that were bridge officers on the Enterprise in the animated series. That's where it comes from. But anyway, they're basically humanoid cats. And apparently it was originally going to be all CGI'd, you know, so it was heavy computer animation going on. And, you know, she was going to, I guess, you know, wear the whole motion capture stuff, but they didn't have the budget for it. So they had to scale it back.
Aww.
So the only thing that we see on her that makes me think that she might not be humanoid or human is she had some really long claw-like fingernails, right?
I saw those, but then I thought that they were sort of like attachments on her fingers.
So one thought that I had is that maybe she was Cation and had been surgically altered or something like that to look human, or that she was human or humanoid and, you know, but had like cat-like tendencies or something. Because I noticed it after I heard that on the podcast when I did my third rewatch today, just before we recorded, I was looking for that. And I did see some kind of cat-like motions with her. So just the way she was kind of prancing around, she was cat-like. So I thought that was interesting. The Ready Room this week, Will Wheaton interviewed Evan Evagora, who plays, of course, Elnor, the Romulan Legolas.
Romulan Legolas, or as he says on the show, Space Legolas.
Yes.
Which I thought was cute.
And aside from that, there was an interesting preview of the next episode on there, little sneak peek. The last thing, and I really didn't get much as far as news this week, but Viacom CBS had their earnings call this week, and they reported their fourth quarter earnings. And I guess after the call, the stock went down like something like 15% or something, because the analysts are questioning this strategy that they're planning to do, where they're expanding their streaming platforms and whatnot. You know, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Apparently, there's some skepticism about it within the analyst community. So anyway, the other thing that they mentioned on the earnings call was the fact that two series are in development beyond the ones that have already been announced. So that was, you know, we know that the Short Treks are there. We know that Discovery's there. We know that Picard is there. We know that the animated show is there. We know that Lower Decks, I mean, and then we know the Nickelodeon show is there, which may be called Prodigy. That hasn't been officially announced, but that was a name that came up fairly recently. But supposedly confirming the thing that we heard a few weeks back, that there are two other shows. So this is the second source, and this time, you know, from the CEO saying that they've got two other Star Trek shows. So they're throwing a lot, and they're also saying, you know, that another movie is in play. So we assume that that's the Noah Hawley film. So anyway, so that's it. So why don't you tell people how to contact us?
Alrighty. To submit your feedback or connect with us, and give us your theories, go to talkthroughmedia.com/feedback, where you can submit us text or give us audio. You can also call 216-232-6146 and leave us a voicemail. You can send us email, and the email address is picardcast@talkthroughmedia.com. Or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekTTMpodcasts. Or you can tweet us at PicardCast. We also have a YouTube channel. So search for Talk Through Media and you'll hear us, not see us.
Yeah, it's worth saying that the episodes are first posted on YouTube. So usually out anywhere from like 4 to 12 hours before everywhere else. So just
there you go.
Yeah. Subscribe to us on YouTube. You'll be able to get the episodes before anybody else.
Cool. Cool.
Great way you can support us is to share our posts that are on Twitter and Facebook. The Facebook group previously mentioned, we're a private group, but if you go to facebook.com/talkthroughmedia, we always post our episodes there and those can be shared. And of course, at PicardCast, you can share those there. I asked previously for the Apple podcast ratings and reviews. So again, you could help us out by doing that. And I mentioned earlier, we're doing recording an episode. We'll be talking about Ruthie's trip to see Shatner and Wrath of Khan, the first 5 episodes, and talk about this book that I kept bringing up about 50 times. We'll talk about those things Saturday, February 22nd. And if you're hearing this after the fact, just join up with the Patreon, pay as little as $1 a month, and you'll get access to all of our episodes there. We'd like to thank our Patreon supporters, James Robbins, Lawrence Todd, Fred Petrie, Clint McCollum, Kyle McAdams, Kim Vogel, Brian Shiro, Christoph Lechleitner, Jeff Biacco, and Lee Radke. And 2 things I want to bring up. I appeared on 2 episodes on Trek FM this week. I mentioned the first one, which was I was on Patron Roundtable episode 62, where we talk about the first couple of episodes, and I mentioned the support about the mature themes and the cursing and all that in support of Brian from Hawaii. I mentioned that on that episode, episode 62. You can find that on the Trek FM Complete Master feed. So check that out. Also, I was on the Earl Grey podcast, which of course covers TNG. I was on episode 312, and you've heard me talk about it here. You've heard me talk about it on the Discovery podcast. I once sold a story premise to Deep Space Nine way, way back in 96. I pitched it way back in 94. But before that, I tried to submit spec scripts, and I talk about that experience and how I got started with it, and then my pitches to TNG, DS9, and Voyager over 5 years, and I talk about all of that on episode 312. So it was a lot of fun. Thanks to Justin, Amy, and Joe for having me on there, and it was a lot of fun. So, and of course, if you're not listening to us on the Discovery feed, I want to mention, of course, that if you watch Discovery, you can get all of the podcasts, both Discovery and Picard, if you subscribe to the Star Trek Discovery podcast. We don't know what the next episode is titled. We don't know who's written it, and we don't have a description, but we do know it's directed by Maya Vervillo. So that's about it. And so until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.